Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this session to order at 6:45 p.m. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to address us before we go into closed session regarding the closed session items? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adjourn to closed session. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this session back in at 7:28. We can all please, rise for the invocation and flag salute. I'd like to say that this meeting we're going to dedicate in honor of Mr. Okura. And if we can just take a moment of silence to remember Mr. Okura and say whatever prayers you'd like for him and his family at this time. Thank you. Would any of the Boy Scouts like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Go ahead and come to the mic if you can lead us. We'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Put your right hand over your heart. Boys, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Okay. Roll call.
Mrs. Fernanda Jimenez.
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
Mrs. Polis.
Here.
Mr. Cox.
Here.
Mr. Spence.
Here.
Ms. Manahan.
Here.
And Mrs. Kaplan.
Here.
Okay, I'd like to go ahead and report out the actions taken in closed session. It was moved by Ms. Polos and seconded by Ms. Shoemaker to readmit the following students. Student number 184106. Oh, I'm sorry. The following students have completed their terms and conditions of expulsion and have been approved by the Board of Education for readmission to the West Covina Unified School District. Student number 184106, lift in expulsion and enroll at West Covina High. The vote was 5-0. Student number 191086, lift expulsion, enroll at West Covina High. The vote was 5-0. Student number 184324, lift the expulsion, enroll at West Covina High. The vote was 5-0. And finally, student number 199428, lift expulsion, enroll at Edgewood High. The vote was 5-0. I'd like to welcome the Boy Scouts. They have joined us today. It's troop number 624, and they're here earning their communications badge, and they're from the Orangewood area. So welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight. For the board president's report, I'd also like to report that this past weekend, the superintendent and I attended training up in Sacramento. We did Brown Act training as well as board president's training, and it was incredibly informative and time well spent. Gave us great information so that we will go ahead and I will start implementing and rolling out. So it was excellent. Thank you very much. Anybody else on the board have any reports? Okay, Ms. Manahan.
Okay, I have a report from all the high schools tonight. Coronado High School, their staff is currently training in thinking maps, so they're holding meetings on that. And 11 students have recently met the qualifications for graduation, and 10 students got sent back to West Covina High School recently after making up their credits. And their basketball and soccer teams are continuing their games in their league. Edgewood High School, they have officially been authorized as an IB school, so they had a school-wide celebration today. And they are hosting their second Renaissance Rally February 3rd to recognize and congratulate for first semester achievements. And recently, 58% of their student body received a Renaissance card for earning a GPA of 2.5 and higher, so they're celebrating that. They're also working on improving their alumni association, so they're having meetings to create a homecoming for EHS students present and past. February 8th, they're holding an awards ceremony for students from 6 to 7 p.m. And following that, they are having an IB parent meeting from 7 to 8. Their next event is their winter formal with the theme of Alice in Wonderland, and it's entitled The Mad Evening in Wonderland, and that is Saturday, February 4th. Lastly, for their events, they're attending a Go Green conference, their clubs, with West Covina High School and Coronado High School, so they could form a new ecology club on campus. Their girls soccer recently placed fourth, so they brought back their first trophy for the school, so they're all celebrating that. And they are continuing their soccer and basketball, and they're starting up a swim team this year. So they'll be sharing their pool with West Covina and Bishop, I believe. For their clubs, their Chinese club just celebrated Chinese New Year, and they actually performed traditional dances for the school. So I thought that was really cool. And their academic decathlon is competing on January 28th and February 4th. Lastly, for West Covina, we just finished finals, and all of our final grades are on our transcript, so whew, that's done. we're continuing with our content-specific vocabulary. We're on week 21 now, so that's a lot of fun. And then our 10th grade students and the KC teachers are preparing for the KC that's coming up, and we're continuing to form our WASC committees to address the academic needs that the visiting committee mentioned, so they're working on that. And our teachers are participating in a high-yield strategies and lesson study where they're working in small groups within their subject level and grade level, and they're observing one another and refining their lesson. So that's exciting. We're also having club promotion this week, and we have a lot of clubs participating to spread the news about themselves. Our dance drill is holding their annual winter celebration this Saturday in the gym. And our band and color guard are hosting a donation drive from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday. And they're bringing out lots of food trucks, and it's a really big fiesta they're hosting. And as far as ASV goes, we're planning for our 10th annual Mr. Bulldog pageant, which is next Friday. Everyone's invited. It'll be 7 p.m. in our cafeteria. And something exciting that we're starting this year is our first ever Kindness Week. Our leadership classes are hosting it, and it's just to really spread peace and kindness on campus, especially since the passing of Mr. Okura has really brought everyone together, and we really want to just share in the kindness and peace that has been going on in our campus. So that'll be the week of Valentine's Day. So we're really, really excited for that. It's going to be really big. And again, Mr. Okura's memorial service is this Saturday at 10 a.m. I have the information if any of you are interested.
Can you go ahead and read it into record in case anyone's listening?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know it's in San Dimas. I have to get the name of the church.
Christ Church of the Valley.
Oh, Christ Church of the Valley, this Saturday, 10 a.m. in San Dimas. And he asked that nobody wears black clothes, that they either wear maroon and gold for West Covina, or a lot of people are planning on wearing Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops in honor of his traditional attire. So that's everything for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Manahan. Thank you. Okay. I see no blue cards in front of me. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to our business session. To approve the agenda and consent items, who will move it? Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. Oh, I'm sorry.
There's anything? A correction on the minutes that goes along with that.
Yeah, you know it, and I did see a correction that I needed to also. Okay. Yeah, there's the one there. The other that I noted was on the presentations on the minutes. It said Teachers of the Year, and it should say West Covina High School Bulldog CIF SS Champions. Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, and then we have another correction that's been placed on our desk, and then there's a correction to the agenda. The correction, the end date on item number 3 is until March the 1st. So it's February 22nd through March 1st, 2012. So that'll be corrected to the agenda. Okay. Okay, given the corrections to the minutes as well as the corrections to the agenda, are there any other items to take off of consent? No? Okay, so Jessica, will you move this?
As amended.
Okay, so Jessica Shoemaker will move as amended. Who will second?
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Cox. Okay, to approve the agenda and consent items, they approve the agenda and consent items as amended, both as amended, for the regular meeting of January 24th, 12. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's carried 5-0. Thank you. Okay, if we can go ahead and move all the way down our agenda to item number 10, Superintendent Kaplan.
With him, he's recommending that our district proceed with the issuance of general obligation refunding bonds for the purposes of refunding two outstanding issues of general obligation bonds that would support our taxpayers and taxes that they currently are paying. We have a presentation for the board, and I'd like to ask Mr. Scott to please join us and go over your presentation and your recommendations.
Thank you. Good evening. What do I press here? For those of you that I haven't met, and by way of introduction, our firm actually worked as financial advisor on this original measure, and we have been watching it on and off over the years. I think this presentation is going to be pretty straightforward, and I'll try to go through it fairly swiftly, but please feel free to ask any questions along the way. I guess the computer comes up here in just a minute. There we go. So in the beginning of this presentation, there are a few pages which, frankly, are just a commercial. And so I'm going to skip through those, if you don't mind, and go directly to page 7. Page 7 shows an example of why this transaction makes sense. These two bond series, the bond series C and series D, two of the four series that were sold of your original authorization, you can see in the top lines, those are the current interest rates that district taxpayers are paying. They vary year for year because each year the interest rates are different depending on when the bonds mature. You can see below that two recent transactions. Actually, these are a couple months ago for similar types of financings, one for Reading general obligation bonds, another for Fruitvale, which is a small elementary district in Kern County. So those are the current interest rates. So what this compares is the interest rates that you locked in a number of years ago on these financings compared to what the current market is. And frankly, the current market is a little bit better than this as well. So by looking at these two and going over a number of dates and hurdles that you've already have already expired, we can actually tell the investors that purchased these first bonds, the ones that you see on top, we want these bonds back. We're going to call these bonds now, and we're going to pay you off with an issuance of new bonds. And by doing that, just like refinancing your mortgage, your payments or your taxpayers' payments are going to fall. Now, there's no cost to the district of this. The transactional costs are taken out of the financing, and if after the board passes this resolution, assuming you want to pass the resolution, the market falls apart, it craters, and suddenly interest rates spike up and this no longer works, then there's no obligation and no fees to the district that are paid. And we would then continue to watch this transaction after you take action, and maybe it takes a month, or maybe it takes 2 months, or frankly, maybe it takes another year. But right now, it works. But you're not locking in anything right now. You're just saying, yes, we want you to proceed, and yes, we want to make sure if this works, if we can do it over the course of the next month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. On the next page, and the numbers, unfortunately, for the audience are a little on the small side, but I'll point them out. So what this transaction will provide is essentially, in today's market, about $1 million worth of savings. That's net of any costs. That $1 million can be returned to the taxpayers in one of two ways. You can either lower their payments every year for the next 16 years, or you can try to put all of those savings up front in the next couple of years. Now, $1 million sounds like a lot, no doubt. It is. But spread over all of the parcels, it turns out it doesn't come out to be that much per person if you spread it out over that 16 years. And you can see in the notes here that if you were to do that sort of even spread over the next 16 years, it comes out to an average of about $1.30 per $100,000 of assessed valuation per year. So not a lot. If, however, you push that savings forward into the next 2 years, and that's the way the math works out, then it would come to about $20 per $100,000 of assessed valuation. And the average assessed valuation in this district is, I have it in here, let's see, I think it's about $150,000.
Mm-hmm. No, it was more than that.
I think you'd be surprised.
250.
I thought it was 250.
250? All right. So then you're coming up with
252,000.
There you go. So that average person would receive about $50 in benefit, in reduction. They're not going to get a check for $50. Their taxes would be reduced for
$50. It's almost like a check.
It's almost like a check. It's a check you don't have to write. I think that's the way about it. Right. What you can see then on page 9, and I thought this was just more of interest, is a view of the assessed valuation of the district's single-family homes in $50,000 increments. So remember, we're not talking about market value here. We're talking about assessed value. And you can see you actually have over 500 single-family homes in this district on the rolls assessed at less than $50,000. Mm-hmm. The average, as was just pointed out, is $252,000. And that's where the bulk of them. I'll also note that you have almost 1,750 homes that are assessed between $50,000 and $100,000. So this is a community where people have lived in their homes for a long time. And then, of course, you have some homes at the top end of the scale as well, and they would benefit the most. If the board takes action on this transaction, on this resolution tonight, the next steps would be to present this to the rating agencies. You've already gone in front of the rating agencies on your last transactions. I'm not anticipating any decreases in your rating. It might actually be a small increase. And then at that point, once we receive the rating, if these numbers still work, then we would go forward with an underwriter and lock in those rates. Now, it may come at that time that it's not quite $1 million, but I will tell you that you can see on the slide prior the percentage savings, if you were to take, for example, the everything pushed forward, the percentage savings is almost 9%. And that's three times what the industry standard is. The industry standard is usually about 3%. So even if you don't quite hit $1 million, I still think it's a good transaction to go forward, and we'd be looking to the superintendent and the assistant superintendent for direction at that time. There's some other information in here I'm not going to go into. It's mostly for background on your assessed valuation. I'm happy to answer any questions about the transaction. In terms of costs that are paid, they would be very similar to what you paid for your original transactions. There's a group of different professionals that have to be involved with this: law firms, advisors, underwriters, rating agencies, accountants, trustees, et cetera, et cetera. All in, those costs come to about 1.5% of the issue size. That's usually what, again, those are paid out of the transaction and are not payable by the district. Are there any questions?
Okay, any questions, Mr. Cox?
Are there any call provisions in the bonds that are currently outstanding in the C&D?
That's actually a good question. In D, there is a penalty that's being paid. It's a 2% penalty. But even with that 2% penalty being paid, it still works. And in fact, not all of the Series D bonds would be called. because some of them just don't work. And you would have that opportunity to call those in the future if rates fell. But, yeah, that 2% on the Ds is a penalty call. Those call features, by the way, would not be put into the new issue. They've kind of fallen away. Nobody asks for them anymore.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. I'm not sure why. But so, yes.
And then on page 8, on this savings analysis that you're looking at, will you explain this present value of savings as a percent of the refunded bonds? Is that the present value of this cash flow savings of that, for instance, that flow over the $1,055,000? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sure. The present value of savings you see at the bottom is a percentage of the total amount of debt service. Mm-hmm. So that's the percentage reduction of the present value of that stream of payments. Okay. The present value, however, is $1 million. I mean, their present value analysis now, the rate is so low that it's essentially the same as the cash value. So there's very little difference between cash value and present value today.
And there's no extension of the existing term?
Under state law, you may not extend a bond, and there has to be a savings that's provided to the taxpayer. So there's no extension, no pushing the debt around, no pushing to the back end, pushing to the front end. It's your decision how you want us to structure it. Either no, we want it all level, or no, we want to provide it to the taxpayers in the most immediate years. And frankly, different districts come at that from different ways. I've seen it both ways.
What generally are most districts doing with respect to level savings or front-loaded savings?
Front-loaded. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Front-loaded.
And that's because they're older and more apt to sell their houses sooner?
No, I think it's a way of benefiting those taxpayers that have been paying on the bond up until now and are in the district now, as opposed to those that may be moving in the next 5 or 10 or 15 years. I will say that I didn't provide it here, but I've also seen districts do it a third way, which is to put all the savings at the back end and try to reduce the number of years of the debt. That's very rare, but it happens occasionally. But mostly districts go, I would say it's not mostly, there's a tilt to the front-end savings that we work with.
Ms. Shoemaker, any questions? No. Ms. Poulos?
If we're asking which way we're leaning, I would definitely lean towards the front end. And I know somebody who's been in her home quite a while that also wanted that. So it would be quite as beneficial as it would be for someone who's only been in their home 2 years. So I would definitely go that way, although I haven't taken a poll of every citizen. One thing I did know that they did not want an increase of anything when I knocked on doors for my past election. They didn't want another bond. They didn't want a tax levy. They didn't want anything like that. But I think if they saw savings front-loaded, that they'd be very appreciated, because I was knocking on the doors right after they got their tax bill.
Yeah, and I should add that once it's our common practice, once the transaction is completed, to provide the district with a press release that then goes out to the newspapers, the radio stations, et cetera, because there's really not a lot of ways people get this information other than for you to tell them.
And I think they'd be very appreciative, because when I was knocking on doors, like I said, they had just opened it. They saw that, and they were saying, don't come to us again. But if they saw we were trying to work with them in these difficult economic times, they'd be appreciative.
Mr. Spence.
Well, I was going to ask, I was trying to remember what year the voters approved the bond. Was it? What year was it?
That was in 2000. It was one of the last two-thirds bonds that was passed prior to the passage of Prop 39.
Right. And
so it was 67, 68%.
Yes, sounds like, it was 67. So it was like 11 years ago. I'm inclined, I remember when the bond passed, there were only two homeowners on the board at the time. And I was one of those, and so I was paying the tax, and my wife, I know, calls another board member every time the tax bill comes to remind him about the bond. I'm inclined, as far as that, is to front-load it, too, for those people who have been paying the bond over those, two, four, whatever years they've been here. I think they're the ones that should benefit from the refinancing. And I guess the second question I have is, also, if we front-load it, that doesn't preclude us from possibly refinancing it later down down the road as well.
No, not at all.
That's right? So, I mean, so why wouldn't we do it front-loaded
right.
if there's an opportunity, you know, 2-3 years from now to go ahead and refinance it and give another savings to taxpayers?
That's correct. And you might also combine it with that portion that's not being refinanced. It right, just yeah. doesn't work. It really depends on what happens with interest rates. It's right. kind of hard to imagine it getting lower, but
yeah, well,
people have been saying
we're here
that
now.
For a year. So.
You said that last time you were here, I think. Yeah, so. Yeah, I mean, so I'm inclined that we front load it for, you know, the savings for the taxpayers at this point. Although the communication issue, you know, I'm not sure a press release actually communicates it, you know, in a, you know, the community sure. to size and, you know, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a number of ways you can communicate.
But, well, I mean, but that's we'll fine. That's fine. That's something. Yeah, but, there. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm headed.
Okay. I know that in reading the packet, I was seeing that it's what if the board wants to front load it or spread it over the 15 years. But in looking at our what we're voting on, it doesn't give us that option. So does that come in a later step? So right now we're authorizing to begin the process.
That comes really from a sense of the board right now. If I hear you saying we want you to front load it, that's the way we'll structure it. But it's not in the resolution because it's not part of the legal proceedings. If the board's general consensus is no, we want to think about it some more, then we'd bring it back to you. But I'm hearing that the majority of the board wants it front-loaded.
Correct.
But it's not in the proceedings, and it's not in the resolution because it just doesn't have to be. It's how we structure it, which is finally approved by the superintendent and the assistant superintendent.
Okay. I think there is a majority of the board that wants to front-load it. I know I'm in agreement with that. I've owned my home for more than 10 years, so I'd like to get that benefit. Is that what I'm hearing from the general consensus? Okay. Then let's go ahead and are we ready to vote?
One more question.
Mr.
What's
Cox.
What's the market like for refunding bonds?
Right now, and when I say right now, I mean right now, it is extraordinary. Now, when you say
really at the below 1% yield?
Oh yeah, it's extraordinary. The problem with refinancing is it comes in waves, and so numerous school districts around the state are just like you, and they see these interest rates and they all begin to get ready to jump in, and as they begin to jump in, more supply comes in, and then the rates begin to rise up. So they come up and go down and go up and go down. There's a little bit of pressure happening on that now, but in general, the rates for these are extraordinary because of the scooping up by mutual funds of these with nothing else to really put in their place. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so for the 2012 general obligation refunding bond request, who will move this?
I'll move it.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Who will second it?
I will.
A tie. Okay, Ms. Poulos will go ahead and thank you. So we are going to adopt the resolution authorizing the issuance and sale of the 2012 general obligation refunding bonds in the principal amount of not to exceed $16 million for the purpose of refunding outstanding general obligation bonds of the district. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it, 5-0. Okay. Item number 11. I go back to the Superintendent Kaplan.
Okay.
Thank you for coming. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so sorry. Thank you for coming.
Each year we talk with our principals about their sites and always ask for a wish list. If there was something that is really important to you that you want, what would that be? And at Holland Crest, I believe it was last spring, our principal, Mr. Glacia, basically said, gosh, I would love to have a walking track on our large property in the back. So Ms. Baston has been looking for ways of possibly getting grants and funding such an initiative. So tonight, what we want to bring to you is what the vision is and a possible way of funding it. So we really kind of want to share with you the thought behind the vision and ways that we could go about funding it. So we also have Loretta, and I want to pronounce your name correctly. Is it
Quash, okay, who is from the Amigos de los Rios, and part of their organization is the Emerald Necklace. And we have Roger Gardner from El Monte City School District, who has participated with this organization to get the same kind of a track. So we kind of have a group here to share with you a vision and a possible way of funding this vision.
Good evening, board members, administrative staff, and community members. Thank you for this opportunity and allowing us to present to you a dream that Holland Crest Middle School has had for many years, and in hopes that you approve our further planning for this dream to become true in benefit of our students and community. One of the things that you will see there, you have a dream that is have a walking trail. And with this in mind, it'll serve the students and the community to create a safe park-like environment. Campus beautification, we're looking at a better use of an open space area. It's open to the, we'll open it up for the community, whether it be in the evenings, in the weekends as well. And this will also encourage students to participate in more exercise and to more fit levels. I spoke to my PE coaches and asked them, how will this enhance your current program? And this is what they said. You know, it'll establish a permanent track for walking, jogging, and running. Any exercise equipment that could be established throughout this track or a walking trail would definitely be a need for them to, whether it's pull-ups or push-ups or swing or whatever it may be. It will also increase their state fitness test scores, such as the mile run and the BMI scores, because it will definitely encourage them to participate more in activities. Then they could also incorporate some relay races, which they don't currently have at this time. And it will definitely provide them a more accurate measure of a mile. Right now they're running around the field and they're guesstimating what a mile is. So they don't have a full accurate measure. With something like this, there will be definitely dimensions, and they could definitely have a more accurate measure with better mile score runs and the BMI scores as well. It would also increase, as I said previously, the fitness and healthy living style for the students. It'll reduce plenty of injuries that are caused by the potholes that there are throughout the grounds right now. Right now, the students are running on the grounds. There may be potholes. There may be some anthills, for example, at points. And that's definitely a safety measure for our students. And at the same time, it'll benefit our after-school programs as well as the extracurricular activities, such as a running club. This is our second year that two of our teachers have a running club going on once or twice out of the week, yet they go out in the community and do their runs. And yes, there's supervision upon them as they're going on the community, yet, but it'd be a lot better for them to run in this track and exercise. We have an annual turkey trot, and that's definitely been a tradition at Holland Crest for years. That could also be utilized for that. And then they have the school sports that we could also implement. The access and availability, Holland Crest is located in a very residential area, as most of you may know. The nearest park there is 1.2 miles away, with Cortez, Cameron, Walmerado, and the Big League Dreams. Yet, all four parks are all geared and mainly for baseball. There's no walking track out there. There's no track field either. So there's definitely not, I would say, something to motivate students to go out and do this with the community members as well. Ms. Baston looked upon the cost, and she estimated at approximately $100,000 to complete some project like this. This is what we have in the aerial view of Holland Crest at this time. This could be an option, the first option. The second picture could be a second option. And as you can see, there could also be a third option in place. So we definitely have the space. At El Monte City School District Columbia School, it's a K-8 school, and this is what they have at this time, which was currently funded by Emerald Necklace. And at this time, I'm going to have Roger Gardner speak up on this, because this is his school site that he oversees the maintenance portion of it.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Roger Garner with El Monte City School District. I'm here tonight on behalf of Amigos del Rios, to say everything they did promise us was accomplished. We currently have two school sites that have two wonderful walking and nature trails, and we do believe that it's not only benefited our students, but our staff and our community as well. Thank you.
Again, I'm Loretta with Amigos de los Rios. We're a nonprofit, and we mostly primarily focus on parks and trails, but that can range from school sites to abandoned sites to the river network. So we're trying to find any little nook and cranny that we can find to green for the benefit of the community. So we work on the Emerald Necklace, which is a network of supporting cooperation and collaboration of agencies. We have, that's fine. So we're a regional, it's a regional vision to connect the mountains to the ocean. And so this is our vision of, with the San Gabriel Mountains and the connection of the Rio Hondo River and the San Gabriel River, and our expanded vision is to create a connection to the Catalina Islands with a network of parks and collaborations. And this is a list of our coalition partners. We currently have 35 cities that we partner with, 5 school districts, I believe 3, I forgot what they're called, residents, community clubs, and also the Board of Supervisors. We have an MOU with them to developing the green trail along the Rio Hondo and San Gabriel Rivers. And here are some of the cities that we partner with. Some we partner more with than others, but that's depending on their needs. We've mostly been focusing on the City of El Monte, and we work a lot with Roger, so we think they're great. So we are primarily focused on federal, state, and foundation grants, which is mostly what keeps us alive and going. So we've had grants from the EPA, Department of Agriculture, Parks and Recreation. We had some state grants, and we've had Proposition A from Gloria Molina, various projects. And we have also had from utility companies, Southern California Edison grants a lot of our educational components of our projects. And we also had foundations such as California Wellness Foundation and Home Depot, and also the California Community Foundation, which mostly granted the development at Columbia, which we just saw pictures of. We received $150,000 from them for the native planting along the edges of the trail. So this is one of our projects. It's the Forest Gateway at Azusa. I don't know the exact numbers of how much we raised for that, but we were able to develop a nature trail, and we use the native river rocks from within the area. And we also use a lot of native plants, which provides very little maintenance. And it's just bringing education back to the community to let them be aware of the nature that's out there that they usually don't see. So we try to bring that back into the urban setting. Here is Durfee Thompson School. We have a joint use trail, which we developed, and it's along the edge of the school, which we'd like to open up to the river trail to connect to our bigger vision of the Emerald Necklace. So project accomplishments. We do have a new multi-benefit park called Gibson Mariposa Park. That's in the City of El Monte. We had a lot of community input on that, and it's a very, it's a butterfly-themed park. It has lots of different butterfly themes and play equipment and native plants to bring butterflies into the neighborhood. And that's going to open in March of this year. And again, we have Cran School, which we just received funding for the expansion of it, because we have just a little corner, so we're going to expand it to go further around the field. And we also have the Community Forestry Program, which we worked a lot with the City of El Monte. and just the walking trails and tracks with the school district with Roger and the Columbia School. So here again is Durfee Thompson Park. So we created an outdoor classroom with benches and nice quiet area for students to go during lunch or during their break and to sit and read. We also have therapy areas with different textures and colors for any special needs students. And we also incorporate educational signage so then they could learn about what's surrounding them and all the important issues that they face. And then just the nature trail that's just pleasant for students to walk around.
So when I first went to El Monte, I actually went there to get best practices on custodian facilities type functions. And I saw their wonderful track, and I asked, you know, where did you get it? How much did it cost? And they told me it was free. I said, well, how much does free cost? And when Roger told me, no, it was really free, I went to the CBO, and we talked more. And truly, this was something that's rare today, something that came in as planned, no scope creep, no change, definitely a partnership, truly free. And Amigos de los Rios actually goes out and helps find these grants. They're very aware of what this is. They have a lot of major projects. And this wasn't, you know, something new. It's something that El Monte School District has been with this program for over 5 years. So, you know, when I asked too, and I think it's a question the board asks a lot of times, well, it's free when it comes in, but what does it cost to maintain? And that's why we wanted Roger to speak to you also about that.
Maintenance wise, as Loretta said, that they're native to the habitat, so it doesn't take a lot of water. Usually, after the first year, we've cut off the water source, and they pretty much survive on their own. You do have weeding that is involved, but anytime you plant anything, you're going to have that situation. And Loretta also has a community groups that come in and volunteer to pull weeds and trim trees and so forth. And they periodically come about every 3 months, and that's usually what it takes to keep it in line, as you can see.
So we like to work with the school districts and the various schools that we are providing the funds for, and we like to involve the students and the community members, and we get them excited and let them know about what's going on, what's going in there, and usually we have a good outcome of parents and students that come out and they want to take care of these sites. So we try to organize volunteer days for these people, and they just come out and we just kind of we have fun with weeding, and we also have experts that come along that are native plant experts, so they do all the mostly the pruning, so then we don't hurt the native plants. But we also teach the community members along with when we're pruning or maintaining, we let them know and educate them about why we do things a certain way and the importance of it.
So as you can see, I mean, there's definitely a great benefit, not only for the community, but for also the students, and make them aware of what nature's out there and bring it back onto the urban setting. We ask for your approval to continue plans and to work in partnership with Emerald Necklace and hopes that, you know, by next year this time, we do have something like this at Holland Crest Middle School, which they have yearned for the past years. And it's definitely enhanced not only the campus beautification, but also enhance the PE department program at our campus. Thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Mr. Spence, any questions?
Me? Yeah, actually, I do have lots of questions. How does the track work in El Monte as far as public use of it?
It's controlled access. You know, when school's on, when school's in session, we don't allow the general public use. They do have access in the morning for morning walks. We have walking clubs now in El Monte. And so in the morning, there is a certain time they're able to come in and do walking. But once the students get there, usually by 7:30 in the morning, we shut it down to the general public. And after 3:30 in the afternoon, it's open again to the general public for walking and exercising. Mm-hmm. And it's open on Saturdays for a half a day. But it is controlled access.
Okay. Because that's one of my questions. I mean, there was a lot of different things in the presentation here, and I had gone to your website a little earlier, too, about stuff. And, you know, this seems fundamentally different than, like, a nature trail, you know, than, like, the nature trail projects or the things that, that are up here. This is a little bit different to me. And one of my concerns is, you know, this walking track is going to be accessible to public, and that's fine because our fields and stuff should be. But my question is whether or not in this residential community that's an appropriate place to have, you know, how many people are going to use it in that location. I mean, because this is not, you know, when I look at the pictures of some of these places, they're much more open. They're much more, you know, easily accessible. You know, this school site's not that accessible. The roads aren't, you know, big. That's the narrow part of Merced. You know, it's right before you go in the hills. And I kind of have concerns about the impact on the neighborhoods of having something that would draw large numbers of people either in the morning or after hours. I don't know what we do about lighting, but after hours, you know, to that area. And, you know, I have concerns about that because I don't know, you know, I could see that there'd be neighbors that would not like that, that, you know, that that place was continually impacted, not just during the school hours, but after and before. And, you know, because it is a different, I mean, have you been to the site? You know, it's much more, have you guys been to the site? Who's been to the site?
Went.
I'm sorry, what?
Our managing director has been to the site, but I haven't personally.
I mean, that's one of the concerns I have, you know, with having something that would attract a large number of people to that place, you know, at various hours. I mean,
we currently do have the use of facilities by soccer leagues, for example.
Right.
And we
and that will continue.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Continue.
So this will be added.
We don't have any concerns by the neighbors as far as that. So well, accessibility for them, parking facilities, and enable them to be accessible for the community. I think it's within the means accessible.
Okay. And you, how did you figure that? How did you figure out how many people would use it at night or in the morning, or how did we figure out what the usage would be and how, combined with the soccer and the other activities that take place there, it wouldn't negatively impact the neighborhood? Because, again, it is a narrow, I mean, those streets aren't huge streets. It's not like, you know, what where Escovina High School is. It's not the where Edgewood is. It's not, you know, it's jammed into a much more residential area.
And that could be something that we could research more into it and provide more information in regards to that.
Yeah, because you know, I understand how it would enhance the PE program, and, you know, usually when people have a wish list, you know, from principals, it ends up focusing on academic things like math and the math scores and things like that. But, you know, so this is a little different. But I have concerns about putting something that would be that would negatively impact some of that neighborhood. It's a neighborhood school, and it's, you know, the streets aren't that big. And if you've ever been there during school time when school gets out, it's a chaos, as you know. And, you know, on Saturday, I've gotten calls about soccer. So and when you add to soccer, you add something else that attracts large numbers of people. I have concerns about that. I understand that it's, quote-unquote, free. But when you look at the pictures there, some of those are much bigger areas, you know, that can accommodate, I think, you know, some of that traffic when you look at it. So, I mean, that's one of my concerns.
You know, one of the things that Columbia School is also sitting in the very residential version. You may have some insights as far as the traffic congestion maybe after school or even on the weekends. I'm not sure if you could speak on to that.
Yeah, Columbia School is located on Ramona and close to Peck Road. It's by the courthouse and
right.
A large general traffic area,
yeah.
But as far as attracting a large number of crowds, no, it's not any bigger than normal for that area. Now, Durfee School, the other walking trail you see, is up by the 605 freeway. It's in a all-residential area, and, yes, it does attract people to come in and walk, and, you know, some of them
mainly
walk. It's the community using it. They're not driving to the facility. They're normally walking from their home. They walk the track or the nature trail, and then they leave. Some of them come off of the 605, that easement that's out there,
mm-hmm.
and they come in and do their walking. And then.
And that's the nature trail, right?
That is a bike trail.
The bike trail, okay.
Off the 605 freeway there.
Yep.
And there is access for them to come in and use it as well on that side. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
There's more usage than what would be normal because of the walking trail.
Yeah, but Columbia, I mean, Columbia where it's at, though, because it is by the courthouse. I mean, there are large streets, and, you know, it's not in a residential area like that. I mean, Because if you look at, you know, across the street at Edgewood, you know, we expanded our parking there, you know, to accommodate the people driving, you know, to use the facility, you know, because people like to use it. And I get that. But at the same time, to put it in a residential community, you know, because that area, there's only two ways in. You know, there's only two ways in because you're not going to go in over the hills in order to get in. You're going to, you know, come up Merced Avenue there, or you're going to come down Citrus, right? I mean, you can't come in because there's only two ways in. There's not four ways
in. That
would
be Hollenbeck.
There's only two. I mean, Hollenbeck. Yeah, there's only two ways in, Hollenbeck and Merced, because you're not going to come in up over the other two over the hills. You're not going to do that. And so, I mean, that creates, I think, some issues for me about having something like that in a neighborhood community. I mean, you know, if we need to eliminate the natural animals that have created gopher holes there and stuff like that, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, I just, you know, I would have concerns about something that adds to that without knowing full well ahead of time what the impact could be.
Ms. Phillips?
I think it's a great idea. I think 7 would be a better plan because 8, that track is right, would be right up against homes in the back and to the east side because that's all homes. It would be very difficult to get to. I don't know if we could add more parking because I know parking is and still is an issue at Edgewood at times.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely would be, and then they have a bigger parking lot on the other side that we don't see here, but that would be quite a walk to the mm-hmm. walking trail.
Unless it was an 8.
But it, jeez. Right, there is, so that might be a reason to put it back there. But right now when I see the students walking, this is where they're walking. Now, what about the little gully here? It doesn't really show what it did you. How are you going to, if we attract more people there, I know one of the things is sometimes the kids go and hide down in that area on the west end right next to the homes. Is there a way to keep, if we're drawing more people into that area, to keep people away from those homes right there?
One of the things the agency also did at El Monte was bring in a lot of trees, which is not part of the track, is a different project they had. And that's what it looks like just at that brim of that gully.
Yes.
It looks like there used to be a lot of trees, and some have gone now. We can use a combination of different type of barriers, maybe bring up the brim, more trees, again, with their support and various other things.
And we also can plant small shrubs that keep people away from the area so they don't hang out there so much. And we also use vines, native vines, which we can also use. And that also creates a screen for the surrounding neighborhoods.
Right, because I know that those houses right there are more impacted mm-hmm. because the students go down in there, and I would sure hate to have that as an attractive nuisance to more, you know, people coming outside of the neighborhood. I did a lot of walking recently in that area, and you see a lot of people in the evenings walking the streets. So I could see it being utilized by the neighborhood there. And several people did ask about it, although it wasn't an issue. But they wanted to know if there was ever, they didn't say exactly at Hollencrest, but they asked if there was going to be a walking trail, a place where they could walk similar to Edgewood closer to their home, because they're at Edgewood, we've provided it, but they said that end of town, is there going to be something closer? So it would be nice if there was something, but I do see if we brought in more cars, that being an issue, especially if they were coming around the time school closed or opened, lighting would also be an issue, because I know when we offered lighting at Edgewood for the tennis, and we didn't offer it at West Covina, that was an issue. So I know if we put something like this, lighting would be an issue, and I don't know if there would be a joint venture with the city.
It'd be an issue for the neighbors.
Right.
The,
well,
the,
they
the
would.
Those houses there.
Right. And we do get because of the lighting, we do have homes around Edgewood that say it stays bright way too long.
Yeah, but they're not that close, too. I mean, they're
right.
Closer than
what I mean, right. Now. And, well, and Orangewood is very bright for some reason. So they, it's very bright in that that's Edgewood. And so I know that
really not me.
That was an issue, but we do try to turn them off at a reasonable hour.
They only have a buffer of two lanes. See, the two highways in here, there's only two lanes, you know, one in and one out on both sides, and there's no, you know, it's not even accessible by three.
But I know the students would benefit from it, because I see them walking now on a regular basis, and they don't have anything that, you know, that Edgewood has, and I don't think Walnut Grove has it either. But
considering the fact that it is a nature walking trail, I wouldn't foresee lighting in the evenings, which would not bother the neighbors. You know, if we have it as a nature walk trail, so that would definitely can eliminate any evening lighting, but wouldn't bother the students or the neighbors, I would say.
But the neighbors were asking to have something like that so they could walk. But I don't think it's going to meet their needs if they can't walk in the evenings.
That's true as well.
So there might be a future issue if you have this great facility that they can't utilize. And that I could see them coming to us in the future wanting lights. So we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
There was a comment about it being very congested there. I go at least twice a week to pick up my niece. And I want to let you know that, and I go down Merced, that I think you guys do an excellent job of having it clear. And there are every so often a parent that tries to park, but I see that very rarely, and I see the people you have out in front addressing those parents and kind of waving them on that they need to find a place to park before they have their child run across the street. And so I really see you doing an excellent job, and I know a lot of parents like I do. I'm an aunt, but I go down Merced and then I pick them up on Hollencrest. And so that's a nice way to do that, and Hollencrest is wider street. But those the houses over here, when I walked, the houses west of the school, there wasn't a lot of complaint about noise. It was the ones east of the school, because the loudspeakers right now, they can hear everything all day. So there is definitely a noise issue already for them. And if we put the track closer to them, I think that it's going to make it worse. Because I know you've tried to address it, and the neighbors have thanked you because you've tried to limit the amount of announcements that happen during the day. So they're appreciative, but I don't know how we could keep the noise down there. And I don't think they play soccer there. They play soccer where the track is now.
Yes.
And where would you move soccer?
Behind it. But within the center of its track itself, it'll still remain.
So all of the majority of the activity during that's already there is going to remain in that same
Absolutely.
Place. And we wouldn't move it somewhere else. Because I know when we did some things at Willowood, we displaced the soccer. And they couldn't find a place to play in anymore because of the relocatables we put there. Well, I think it looks great. If there's a way to make it work, I know we have an individual who lives in that area sitting in the audience now. And so if there's a way maybe that we could find out from the neighbors if this is, you know, poll them and find out if this is something that would be accommodating and if they have ideas about traffic. And having this facility so close outweigh some of the traffic issues that they may not have had in the past,
but probably eliminate some of the traffic at Edgewood, since maybe some of the neighbors or community members drive towards
right.
this way to use this facility out here. So maybe the traffic may not be as congested at Edgewood, and if the neighbors from around Hollencrest are walking to
the walking
campus,
path. Yes.
Then there will be no issues with parking, for example. And if we were to have it available and accessible to the community after, let's say, 4 o'clock. When all the students have left the campus,
mm-hmm.
then that will also eliminate that, transition of traffic from
releasing the students and then inviting community members to use the walking trail.
I only have one other quick question. It said it was connected somehow with the Emerald Necklace. And so I went online, too, today, and I was trying to figure out how is it. But you're just looking for open space, not that you're connecting us in any way with the Emerald Necklace as it is now, because I think of the bike rides they have on the Emerald Necklace, and we wouldn't be part of that.
Not
we would just be an open
it's
space.
It's more like a state of mind.
Okay.
Just a network of parks all over that's connecting the whole region together.
A state of mind. Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Kay.
Mr. Spence has some additional questions.
I'm a little bit confused then about the facility.
Any chance that we could speak?
Well, actually, I didn't get a chance to finish my original questions, so I'm just trying to finish my original questions about the facility.
Well, she asked me.
And that is, okay, you're going to play soccer in the middle of this, so what kind of – is it a nature walk? Or is it a facility that people can run relays on? Or how is it a nature walk if you're playing soccer in the middle of it? I mean, is it a soccer-grade field? Because when I look at this picture, I don't see a soccer-grade field here that, you know, people would play soccer in the middle of. And so, I mean, is when you say nature walk, what does that mean as far as the track surface, and how is that different than a normal one that you would use for PE relays and the kinds of things you were talking about for that program? Because to me, they're two different things, a nature walk and a physical education facility are two different things.
We try to incorporate both. We use decomposed granite for the actual trail, which it's not pavement or asphalt. Mm-hmm. So it gives it a little more of a nature quality, but it's still stable enough where students can run, where it's not kicking up dirt, where it's not getting eroded. So we like to call it a nature trail because we like to incorporate
natural
elements.
It's a state of
mind.
Yeah,
but it can be, it's multi-use. It can be used for any type of purposes.
Yeah, but, I mean, is that the soccer field? I mean, what would be the, you know, the soccer field?
Looking at the picture, Mike, it is a soccer field in the middle.
Really?
We also have our PE out there. There you can see the field. You can see the track around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nature walk is incorporated around the track in our field.
So when you look at this, there's that concrete berm, there's the grass, there's the running track, which is the oval, and then off to that is where the walking track begins, the nature trail, and it kind of meanders off and into the bushes and other ways and back around.
And so is that this little corner on here? Is that the nature walk?
Yeah, it's starting
on
here,
this here
where you see the benches. You can see there's
no,
the
I mean,
nature
on
walk.
Our map here in Holland Crest.
Well, we just kind of took their track and overlaid it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the little corners there, we didn't design the whole thing yet. We haven't got it all together. But to give you, and see, this is an example where the track, the nature walk continues here at El Monte, but you still have the running track circling. Now, and what do I leave first? The, oh, that's theirs.
And soccer the, people are fine with that field?
Yeah, the inside.
What they play on now is this green stuff.
Well, no, I think it, no. There is a difference. The I mean, there is a difference between. I mean, you know, if there's a problem with Gopher Holes, we can go out there and take care of that. But I mean,
they're playing.
That looks fundamentally different than where most the soccer people play in our. Okay.
And again, what we tried to do is just take an overhead view of what's already existing at El Monte and try to give you kind of conceptual. We still have to design that, but yeah, and these little corners are where you see it kind of meanders out, and there's other walking trails around it. And you can see we have a large green belt, so we can still use this and center us. That's why we looked at a couple different options. And the next step would be, once you approve this, if you would approve it, is to get into that design, because not everybody can run. Some of us need to walk.
Mm-hmm.
You have the nice running track for the students. For people that like to do that jogging, and you still have the ability here with our large area to create something for the walking, you know, for people that want to walk, young children, if you just want to get out, even our staff, you know, at lunchtime to take a walk after lunch and refresh and come back. It's a good opportunity. But you're correct, we haven't got a full design here yet.
Yeah, because the parking thing, I mean, Mrs. Polis wants the number 7 one, but that's, you know, that's the farthest away from all the parking, which would actually... You know, that's what makes it even harder for me to kind of envision if we did that, because it's further away from the parking, less accessible, especially with people that may have special needs. It just seems, in the community, it just seems that it's a harder place to put it than in the back, but the back is problematic to me. Again, the whole thing to me is problematic because it's just jammed into that residential neighborhood.
I think the purpose for tonight is to look at it from a the purpose for tonight is a conceptual, kind of conceptually, if the board agrees to this, it doesn't hold us where it's, you know, we would keep bringing back plans to the board. We would start the planning process. I think tonight we're really just talking about it in a conceptual way. All the issues you bring up are certainly things we need to get more information about, but we're trying to, you got to start somewhere, and you start with the concept. By signing with the Emerald Necklace, it doesn't hold us to any obligation. It just starts the process moving forward so that we can come back to you with answers to all these questions and make an informed decision as a goal. But we're not trying to answer all those questions tonight. We're really just trying to present something to see if conceptually you agree with it.
Mr. Cox.
There we go.
Okay. Ms. Shoemaker.
I also like number 7. I actually live fairly close to this neighborhood. My sister went to school here. She had an unfortunate incident with some of the potholes in the field, but that's another story. I think this area is actually perfect for where you would place it, because people do park on the street. There is a crosswalk right there by there that we could possibly put in a gate. The crosswalk is handicap accessible. The parking lot on the side here also has a driveway that is handicap accessible, so it's actually perfect in that regard. There is a lot of parking on the street. People in the area are used to the parks closing at night. Since you don't live in the area, you're not aware of Galster Wilderness Park, which is parking trails and everything, and walking trails and everything else. So we're used to the gates being closed at sunset and not being able to access those areas any longer. And I would point out that there is a council member from West Covina here. As part of your organization, you may want to talk to them about partnering with them with our Galster Park, and we also have a wildlife reserve here in West Covina as part of your Emerald Necklace.
Okay.
But in terms of Holland Crest, I think this is great to have a track here that people could walk on and not have to go all the way over to the high school, not have to go to Edgewood. As you pointed out, Big League Dreams is really more for baseball. Mm. I think the community would be receptive to it. In terms of lights, we are sort of focusing on the idea that you need the big overhead fluorescent lights that are around the normal tracks. If it came to a point where we wanted to have this open at night for people to walk on, what is there to say that we can't use the floor lighting that you would use in a natural garden rather than, you know, track lighting? By putting it here, the picture number 7, you're leaving a lot of space in the back. You're not impacting the neighbors who are already not really impacted because all of the activity happens here. You know, the sports courts for PE are right next to where the proposed site is in number 7. It's accessible to the community. I am just really excited about this and really hope that the rest of the board is interested in moving forward with this.
Mr. Cox.
Thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it and appreciate everything that you're doing, you know, in the county areas and that is. This is a very good program. My wife and I for many years have taken opportunity to walk along the Thompson Creek Trail, which is in Claremont. And it's just phenomenal. And I know that the mayor, Mayor Tui here, is here tonight. And I know he's very much a proponent of the walking trails that we're talking about doing along the West Covina Parkway and going from Azusa to the shopping malls and that sort of thing. So this is a great program. This is a great place to do exactly what you're talking about doing. My only regret is that when we reopened this school back in 1995, that we didn't do it at that time. But those things being as it was, you know, we did it. Again, bringing in the mayor also, when we had an opportunity to redo the high school track and put in a rubberized track and artificial turf for the field. I had an opportunity to meet with the mayor at that time, and he was extremely supportive of the program. We tried to get the city to help us and be involved with that, but it's, you know, economically it doesn't always work that way. But practically, I know that he was very much in support of that. And I know he's in support of everything going on in that side of the community, and I think that it's something that the city, I'm sure, will be happy to help us with. As a matter of fact, we have, you talked about adding trees. We have a need now for an additional 140 trees in our community, and so this perhaps would be a place where we could add a portion of those and rebuild that additional 140 trees that we need in this community. When the school was first opened, we actually had a baseball program. There are baseball, a Little League program, I believe it was San Jose Little League, that was there. And unfortunately, they weren't there, weren't enough.
South Hills, that went
for a number of years. Good things for the kids and that sort of thing. I do live in the area, so it would certainly be of my personal benefit if you would consider doing something of this nature, especially making it available on the weekends, because my wife and I had to drive all the way across town just for the opportunity to walk on the track. And an occasion, though, those occasions that the West Covina High School is open, we use that too. But this would be really nice to be able to use. And we do see probably 2 to 3 times as many people that are involved in our community that walk in this local area too. And I know that they'd find this as being just a great opportunity. I do have some of the concerns that the others had with respect to continuing with the soccer fields, continuing with the lighting. It's not, I don't think it's a big deal. Making it available for the weekends, we do want to make sure that the privacy of the neighbors is observed as we're going through this, and parking also. But, you know, people come and go, so that's a good thing. So I think this is a great thing, and I look forward to working with you and helping with it. Thank you.
Okay. I'm also very pleased. Thank you, everyone, for coming and for making the presentation. And I've done the Claremont Trail, too, and I really like that one a lot. I walk a lot. Everybody knows that on the board, so this would be really nice. My only concerns are securing the school. Currently over at Edgewood, you really can't, there's not a whole lot of access into the school, and we've got the track that's open. I understand this has a different flavor and feel to it, so that those would be my concerns to take a look at as we move forward. I am thrilled about the outdoor classroom and that opportunity. I remember that in high school and in college all the time when the professors would take us out on gorgeous days and to go study outside, and what a difference that made in terms of interaction and really embracing the curriculum when you're outdoors with nature, communing with nature. So I'm excited about all those added benefits. We could get into further details at a later time in terms of placement. Is it going to go better here or here, and classroom use and things like that. But I'm really excited, and thank you for partnering with us. We appreciate that. So if there's no other questions? Okay, we are, it's moved by Mr. Steve Cox, and it is seconded by Jessica Shoemaker to authorize West Covina Unified School District staff to apply for membership in the Emerald Valley Accord and seek support of other member agencies for the Hauling Crest Walking Trail Project. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we have 4 ayes and 1 no. Motion carried. Thank you.
And I just want to say, for further planning, I think it would behoove us to have a committee with community members on the committee as we move forward, so we're getting input, which I think you want anyhow, from our community, and continually to bring this back to the board as we move forward for your approval. So we'll put together a process to make sure that the board is part of it as well as the community. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
tonight.
Thank you so much. Okay. That brings us to the end of our agenda. Are there any Board of Education discussion items? Okay, seeing none.
I just want to the date, January 28th. I know we're trying to change it. I think some of our board members have problems with February 4th. I will try to get some additional dates from our consultant. Are there any dates that I should not? I'm just wondering, are there any dates that are? Should I just get a group of dates and send it to you?
Yes.
That'd be best.
So the 4th is off?
I believe we have 2 board members who are not available on the 4th.
Cool.
So I will get us another date.
Okay. Okay, so we have on January 28th, for those who want to attend Mr. Akura's services, they're at 10 a.m. at which church, Mr. Spence?
Christ Church of the Valley.
Christ Church of the Valley, with a reception immediately following.
It's over by the hospital.
Okay. That's at 10 o'clock for all those who want to attend Mr. Okura's services. We have February 13th, Lincoln's Day. Schools and the school district offices will be closed. February 14th, is our next Board of Education meeting. Everybody come with your candy hearts. And February 20th, President's Day, schools and the district office will be closed. There being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of January 24th is adjourned at 8:41. Thank you.